All right.
Oh, hey, everybody.
Welcome to the special edition Podzor podcast of our...
Dojo Tour 2006.
That's right. It's 1.0.
1.0.
Today we're interviewing Charles Pippin and Don Young, the founders of Innovative Martial Arts and the style Sanyeondo.
Dojo right now.
All of the echo problems I had on episode 40 will be once again repeated.
Yes.
In the dojo tour.
Dan will be driven crazy once again.
I'm slightly obsessed.
Some people pay extra for that.
For the audio quality. That's right. Yeah. We're in a beautiful white washed dojo, newly painted, recently painted. Looks beautiful in
the
here.
The floors are made of this nice, springy, cushiony gymnastics flooring.
Yep, exactly.
The coolest floors you will ever fall on.
Yep. I think so, too. Very good for falling and whatnot.
Not that that happens here.
I say, we don't do any of that
here,
though.
Right.
No,
And not too many bloodstains.
Yes. Now, as a disclaimer,
right.
Sterling and I are both black belts in Sanyeondo and have studied with Chuck and Don for... I've studied about probably about 3 years now,
and I've been here almost four.
Yes.
Four. I think four at the end of this year. Four.
Yeah. But there will be no bias at all.
So we might go. Right. Well, I just wanted to warn him that we might go a little bit harder on you guys.
Right. We're gonna grill you.
And for the record, I have a service that takes care of the blood stains.
That's what it is.
Big green.
What it is. So I guess the first thing we can start off with is maybe a little bit of bio from each of you guys. Chuck, what's your background?
I spent my early years in karate and taekwondo and hapkido. Since
early years as in teenage or
teens? I started studying...
What was that, like 50 years ago?
It's a class dedication.
Chuck's only a year older than I am, but I like to give him a hard time because that 1 year goes a long way.
Especially 2005. I spent the high school years being a throw dummy for my friend who was in Shotokan, and after that got formally into Taekwondo and Hapkido and some other more eclectic arts. Spent some time with Tai Chi, Penjak Silat. Don suckered me into the hand-to-hand combat stuff.
Yeah, sorry.
That really was probably a big turning point between the Tai Chi. Sounds funny, between the Tai Chi and the Scientific Fighting Congress. those were two very crucial points in my life that really kind of led to where we're at now.
So you, that's kind of interesting. The Tai Chi and what the Scientific Fighting Congress teaches seems very, not oppositional, but at opposite ends of the spectrum.
They really are. The Tai Chi, what I got from the Tai Chi was more of the caring for the tribe, the community aspects, the attitude and teaching. The way I teach tends to be geared more towards the way I was taught in Tai Chi, as opposed to being real strict and militaristic and things like that. The Scientific Fighting Congress, and I think Don will definitely agree with me on this, is that was a point where it really helped me, at least, to be able to bridge all of my previous training, because there's a lot of dogma, I guess, in my opinion, and these are just my opinions.
But keep in mind that's what we're here for is you know, is to not necessarily just get
a lot of the very traditional training I didn't find was very useful to me in today's world.
Okay.
And I've never been one who's really been geared towards competition, you know, point sparring and tournaments and things like that. I've always been more more led towards the let's take care of today. And, you know, yourself in today's world against today's dangers and teach as many people as you can. And that's what Hawk really did for me was he helped me bridge all that old W. Hawk Hockheim, Grandmaster Hockheim from the Scientific Fighting Congress. he helped me be able to really bridge all of my old training and take it into today's world context.
Very cool. Very cool. Don, what about you? What's your history?
Studied martial arts for about 13 years now. Started off in Budo.
Traditional
karate and jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
Oh.
Beautiful places. Every time I go back to New York, I still go to my first dojo.
So you started in New York, huh?
Yeah.
And you made it all the way to Michigan.
All the way to the hole that is Grand Rapids.
What That's what crack cocaine will
what,
do.
What here. Brought you here, the Dutch? you came for the Dutch women, didn't you?
Well, started off with the Japanese martial arts. From there, I had the opportunity to study Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do system for about 2 years.
Wow. And that was cool.
There's all these different levels, and Chuck will probably agree with me. As you look back on your career, there's all these different levels where you get, I don't know if it's an epiphany, but there's just something new that really clicks.
Yeah.
Jeet Kune Do really clicked for me.
Okay.
It taught me things in literally 2 or 3 days that it took me 2 or 3 years to learn in the more traditional martial arts. So that was really liberating.
Interesting.
But at the same time, while it was extremely efficient, it had its own dogma.
Do you feel that when you had that epiphany in Jeet Kune Do, do you think that it was essential to have that other background? Do you think you would have had that epiphany without going through the previous?
Absolutely not, because there'd be nothing to compare it with. It would just be a cool way to punch.
Right, right.
You know, but it's interesting because after doing the Jeet Kune Do, I went back to the Budo, Kempu Jutsu, and I started seeing all these things that were in it. That nobody had pointed out to me before. And so when you're able to compare different martial arts, then you start seeing things in both that maybe you wouldn't have seen before. It just gives you a more rich, comprehensive view of everything that you're doing, which is a great thing about being an eclectic system.
Yeah. Do you guys think since, probably especially since Bruce Lee, it seems to me anyway that martial arts have gotten more and more... or I should say less and less dogmatic and more sort of, not theory necessarily, I can't really think of the word I'm trying to get at, but more and more, instead of punch like this and I'm not going to bother to explain it and this is how you punch and you will punch for 10 years and then I will teach you to kick. It's more of a, you know, these are the theories behind punching and these are why you punch like this, because you're trying to line up your bones and...
I think that it's slowly shift. My belief is that it's slowly shifting towards that way because this is more. We've never had more information at our fingertips than we do now, and people are looking for more and not blindly following some of the old stuff anymore. You know, why is a question you hear a lot more now than you would have 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, because then you ask why and you got the stick.
Right.
Yeah, you're a lot less likely
why you get the stick, now, but you also get the stick.
Right.
Well, now if you get the stick, I'll go around the corner to this person.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
The thing is, in the American culture, nobody will do that.
Right. No.
There's just no way that some... Well, there are definitely the people who love the traditional... old way of learning, but in general, you know, the American psyche just isn't.
Well, and I think from Bruce's time in general, after he kind of broke away, you know, and broke through the standards that were set, that people started being more open about what they taught. And because and now, you're right, you can go around the corner. Or way back in the day, I mean, somebody taught you their system. I mean, you probably had to beg and plead just to get him to teach it to you, especially if you weren't in the family. There's just no way.
Right. Back in Bruce Lee's day, you know, they really had to prove to him that they were worthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
He was in trouble because he was teaching to Americans.
Yeah, he was going outside the bounds of the established system, and that ticked people off.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about Sanyin Do?
Well, I would have to say, Don, help me out with this. We have to set the Wayback Machine a little bit.
Please, yeah, go ahead.
Wayback Machine.
I mean, in all honesty, one of the impetuses for this, actually, is so that we can also have sort of an oral history of... Well, the history of our art, you know, and where it came from. And I'm also curious to find out what you went through to get your martial art certified and authenticated and stamped and double stamped and things like that.
Well, I've been frustrated pretty much ever since I was a couple years into Taekwondo and Hapkido, because a lot of the ways they were teaching were based around competition, and I was much more interested in practical application.
Did you attend the Scientific Fighting Congress before or after that?
After. I was already a second degree black belt in Taekwondo and Hapkido before I met Don, and that was a big changing point right there, because up until that point, I had only known about the Japanese and the Korean and the Chinese systems. Meeting Don was actually a turning point for me, because I'd never seen Arnis before, for one, and had never done any formal stick or blade training up until that point. In fact, when we started trading, I was shifting away from Taekwondo, or you call it, street Taekwondo or maverick Taekwondo, because I'd gotten into not here's how you can score a point, but here's how you can break somebody's leg. Or,
it was a bit more kickboxing than the rigid Taekwondo.
It was much more freestyle.
Yeah.
And I was just under the name Taekwondo because I didn't have anything better to call it. And people, I just wanted to call it martial arts, but people kept asking, well, wait.
What kind? What style?
What do you do? It's kind of like this, but not. Yeah. It's kind of like that, but not. And the first time we started training with a single stick or knife, I kept dropping the stick and knife because I wasn't comfortable holding it. So I'd block with my stick, and I'd drop it and grab his arm. And it was just from there, he kind of brought me to one of Pac's seminars, and the rest, as they say, is history.
When was this? How long ago was this?
About 5 or 6 years ago.
Right about that long.
It was end of night. It was right around 99.
It would have probably been in 99.
Yeah. Yep. 99, and then it's been pretty going strong ever since, but. Basically, I sat down with Don, and cause this idea I'd had brewing for a while, and was writing notes and stuff, and Don was someone that would ask questions, and that helped me find the answers, because I had all these ethereal questions that I couldn't quite put words to, and there were more feelings and stuff like that, and intuition, and Don really helped me be able to troubleshoot and put down words to it, and it was great. It was a long labor of love, but and it's still evolving. We had Sanyudo 1.0, Sanyudo 2.0.
We're in the process of 3.0 right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure out of our listeners' curiosities, and I know when I read the story, I was curious. But how do you go about making a new martial art?
Yeah, I mean, what were the steps involved?
That was really hard for me to do because, who am I to make up a martial art? And I'll be the first to tell you that nothing I do is new.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I wanted to make sure to mention is that you are always very humble about saying, look, I created this martial art because these are the things that speak to me.
Yes.
And those that want to come and learn the things that have spoken to me, fine. But you have never said, my way is the only way and this is the best way.
Right.
And,
no.
Yeah.
It put us into a corner because it's always changing.
Yeah.
That was the best way yesterday. Today.
You know that form you were doing 2 years ago? It doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah. It's basically what I actually called it Sanyudo because I was told I had to name it.
What does Sanyudo mean?
Sanyudo is, rough translation is way of three harmonies, or three harmony way. San, three, yun is harmony, and do is
now
way
is,
of.
Is that Japanese, Korean, or
Chinese?
Yes.
There's one character for each.
Oh, there's one.
I'm paying homage to my original.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yep, the three characters that we use.
But it makes sense. I mean, really.
Yep.
Because nowadays, I think we actually have a word for a martial art like Sanyudo. Before, where you'd be like, well, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of this.
Exactly.
Nowadays, people resort to pretty much calling that a mixed martial art.
Exactly. And it is.
It's a hodgepodge of everything that we like and that works, we feel works.
When Don and I sat down and we co-wrote our mission, and that was one of the ways that we helped us kind of filter out and filter down what we wanted to do, is our mission is to have our students, first and foremost, be the ones to go home to their families.
So it's a very practical, oriented practical martial art.
Yes, the core of it is very practical. The core of it is a skeleton. It's not the fleshed out entity. What we strive to do is adapt what we do to the individual, not force the individual to conform to our mold. Yeah. Because everyone brings something new and exciting to our class.
Well, you know, I think that one of the quotes that makes me think of is, I'd rather have an idea than a belief. Because ideas are something that you can change.
Yes.
And beliefs you can't. And so when you spark anything based on an idea instead of based on a belief, then you can always say later on down the road, you know what, that was based off an idea, and the idea is still good, but I know from personal experience that the things that surround that idea can change without upsetting the core of the idea itself.
Times change, people change.
Weapons change. That's probably one of the most common ones.
That's right.
We tried to teach our weapons as concepts rather than the individual weapon. You know, we have the two-handed impact implement, the staff. Mm-hmm. We have the single-handed striking implement, you know, the stick.
Yeah.
Edged or pointed implements, knives, or broken bottles, or chair legs, you know,
right,
or pool cues, or whatever happens to be handy.
So essentially what we learn in Sanyan Do for a knife can also all be applied to a broken bottle as well.
I carry a ballpoint pen on the planes when I go flying.
Yep.
There you go.
A nice stainless steel ballpoint pen. Because it's a really nice pointy object.
Yes, it is.
So what was your next step after you sort of got a mission statement and a sort of a centralized your idea for what you wanted your martial art to be?
Next step was I've always loved doing forms, and I know some arts don't have them, and that's great, but I wanted to kind of keep them because, I don't know, call them nostalgic reasons.
Yeah, well, and I think it's funny because from knowing you, I think that you're a traditionalist and an anti-traditionalist all at the same time.
Oddly enough, that's a good way to put it.
There's like two people in you constantly doing battle for that.
That whole balance
he
thing.
He is yin and yang.
But so what I did was I took my old forms and kind of took them apart. And one of the coolest things I've learned in practice, I don't know if I learned it at one specific point or if it just kind of the idea evolved, is that it's not the endpoints that you focus on. It's everything that happens in between.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put that into a lot of different areas in life. I mean, life itself, it's not the endpoints. It's the stuff that happens in between.
Right.
And so I took the old forms that I'd had to learn, and I kept the names out of respect for where I came from and what helped me get here. And I looked at, okay, what's the intent behind...
And now are those the forms that you're talking about, Taekwondo forms?
Yep. The old, you know, Chunji, Dangan, Dosan, all the ones that you guys had to do repeatedly on your test. the same basic directional patterns are there by and large.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about 85 to 90% of the directionality is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the number of times you go in various directions, but... what's the intent behind this set of movements?
Right.
And how can I put that into a context today, for today's world?
Sure, sure. Hey, Mushad.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Yes. We're doing a Chuck interview for our podcast.
And everybody who listens to Chuck and Mushtaq's podcast, Mushtaq just,
Mushtaq Ali,
just entered the door. So. Yeah.
Everyone can say hello to him. There we go.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
See, an added benefit.
See how that works?
Innovative martial arts.
So just one more minute.
That, I think that also
is one more minute.
Concept, right, of our martial art is that
we exercise and we eat.
food
is critical, actually. Yeah.
That's right.
So, yeah, the forms that we practice, in, or the patterns we call them, because we also... the patterns aren't fixed. We allow a certain amount of flexibility in their patterns, and like on test days, you guys all heard this, add a link. Add two links.
Well, why is it that you call them patterns? Why is it that we call them patterns and not forms?
The word forms, to me brings images of fixed
set.
I see. Very rigid.
Forms are a belief and patterns are an idea.
Exactly.
It's a very good way to put it.
That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah.
But I want people to have some freedom to interpret.
So the patterns then is essentially one of the first things you built for the system then.
Yes.
I see.
Yep. We also tried to narrow it down, and I modeled it on the Congress model, the Congress of Scientific Fine Congress model of basic movements. Instead of doing a lot of the traditional blocks and punches and strikes, we look at directionality of attacks and defense.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I learned from W. Hawk Hockheim was the clock drill. And pretty much everyone knows what a clock is. I'm not talking about the digital ones. I'm talking about the ones with real hands.
Yeah, in 20 years, you're going to have trouble with that analogy.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was at a seminar, and I said, okay, how many people here have wristwatches? And everyone raised their hand. I said, okay, how many people have wristwatches that aren't digital?
Yeah.
And no one raised their hands.
It's the old
analog.
Don't snap. Don't change that dial when the commercial comes on. Nobody knows what that means anymore.
But we look at for instance, that anything coming from the 12 towards the center of the clock would be a descending attack. It's not necessarily a hammer fist. It could be a ridge, forearm strike. It could be a finger rake. It could be an elbow. It
could be a stick.
It could be a stick. Could be a knife. Could be a staff.
Chair.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, it could be a chair. That's another story. But it could be anything. And so we look at those directions, and we try and focus on getting the students into what directions can attacks come from, not what specific attack is coming at you. Because it really doesn't matter when it's moving at blinding speed. What? Oh, that's a perfectly formed phoenix eye. No. It's something hard coming in straight at me.
Right.
Very fast. Right. I have to move.
Right.
So we wanted to kind of cut through some of that dogma and simplify it down, especially at the lower levels. And so we set up groundwork with that first. We worked on footwork, mobility.
Mm-hmm.
One of our little tenets is mobility is life. Better to use your feet to not get hit than use your arm to block something. We worked on breath. The importance of breathing, I'm rather attached to it myself. Proper breathing.
There are some non-martial artists that I know listen to the podcast and will probably listen to this episode. And breathing is one of those things that people take for granted. And when I tell a lot of people that I've always had a challenge with breathing properly in my martial arts, they look at me like I'm crazy. It's in and out.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
not very much complicated to it. But even after the I don't know 13 years that I've been practicing martial arts, I still don't get it.
Me either.
Well, it's something that I'm still working on myself. I think everyone continues to work on, but it's something that really helped me control my asthma. I mean, I'm fighting it now because of a cold and upper respiratory infection, but. By and large, especially after my lung surgery, when I had half of my lung removed, it has helped me to be able to control my asthma and my breathing a lot more, even some of the exercises that we did in class. We've got mobility, we've got
breathing,
and we've got structure. Those are the three things we start with, and part of our logo is a triangle, and there's a reason for that. Mind, body, spirit, breath, motion, structure, motion would be mobility. And from there, the first levels of the forms really focus on building that upright economy of motion, looking where the breath is, where's the perceived effort, where's the relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And the forms kind of build from there.
So, well, after you got sort of the, I hesitate to use the word formalized, but after you got the system formalized, or at least the basic structure of the system written down, I know that you've talked to me about going in front of a board or something like that. I've heard the story before, but I can't quite remember it.
That was both heartening and disheartening at the same time. It was heartening in that I had a lot of really awesome guinea pigs. Don was a tremendous help in putting that together and helped me put the guinea pig. I mean, the students to their paces. A lot of my students had started off with me in Taekwondo, and they had to relearn a lot of stuff. And they,
it's what we do is drastically different.
Really. Yeah, in fact, I got some of my students back from the place I used to teach when I quit there. They brought in another. It was a gymnastics studio,
mm-hmm.
and I quit there because for political reasons, and cut short.
In the martial arts?
Yeah. Yeah.
Taekwondo school?
Yeah, and actually after a couple of students came to visit and they saw what we were doing now, we actually got more students back from them. In fact, Sarah and Whitney have been with me for almost 10 years now.
Right.
We basically had a lot of really cool people that helped us try stuff out, mm-hmm. and we threw some of it out. We kept most of it. Then I worked through a lot of it just after hours together. You'd come over to my house and we'd work out in the driveway or something.
What's the saying? Chip away anything that's not an elephant? That's the idea.
Exactly. After that, I started calling around and sending emails out to these various martial art organizations, and I was looking for somebody who wanted to take the time to get to know what we were doing and then say yes or no, or you need to shore up this area.
Now, I've heard a lot of these places will you know, print out a piece of paper from their inkjet printer.
That's an awfully expensive piece of paper.
And send it to you for $150.
Well, here's the question. I mean, really, honestly, I mean, who are these guys? And why do they get to decide that, yes, this is good enough to be a martial art or not?
And that's the thing. I want somebody who I respected,
mm-hmm.
who was going to take the time. And if I respect them, I know that they've got, they're at least in the same, I don't want to say skill set, but often will hopefully be better skill set than I am, because otherwise I'm not looking for a peer to say, yes, I'll back you. I'm looking for somebody who's been in the industry, as it were, for a lot longer than I've been, saying, yes, I've been where you are. I know what you've done, and I respect what you've done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what I got back was...
Sort of, if everybody gets an A, what's the meaning of that?
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Send me a check for anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000, and I'll send you a piece of paper.
Wow.
There's a lot
of. And then you can pay me like $500 a year or more to maintain your charter.
Well, if anyone out there wants to get the Podzor Martial Arts Certification,
send us $10,000.
Send us anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000,
and we will bring you the most beautiful certificate you've ever seen.
I guarantee you, you've never seen one more beautiful.
That's right.
And it sounds to me like, I mean, that is genuinely, as funny as it is, as legitimate as some of the places that you researched.
It really is. It really is. I could print off a prettier certificate than some of these guys are sending out too, okay? You guys have seen my certificates.
Yeah. They're beautiful.
Okay. But I finally, through my training in Silat, became a member of the KSMA group, the Kapteran Suntukan Martial Arts group, and that means Boxing Brotherhood. And he had actually gotten to, I'd been working out with him for a while, and he found out what I was doing. He said, well, hey, Chuck, you know, we've got that KSMA over here, and we're international. You can trace our lineage.
I'm sorry, but KSMA?
KSMA. Kapiteran Suntukan Martial Arts.
Whoa.
Back to
if you can spell that.
Yeah.
That's
Mushtaq and Jay. All those guys put that all together.
Yeah. It's been around for over 10 years now, I believe. And,
oh, okay.
They've all got, you know, that you can go out right to their website. I think it's ksma.org.
Yeah.
Don't swear to it. We're linked to it at Innovative Martial Arts, though.
Yes.
And
if you're not, slap the web developer.
I
mean, damn it!
But, and he introduced me to Professor Daryl Sargent of the Silent Warriors Martial Arts Association. And
okay.
Through corresponding with them, I was able to get an audience, as it were, and at one of their Silent Warrior gatherings, a bunch of us went down. I think Steve Tobias, Mike Pope, Mike Williams, myself. Yeah, I think that was it.
Where'd you go? Where was it at?
We went to Lawton, Oklahoma for their Silent Warriors gathering.
Oh, okay.
And I got to present San Yendo to a board of directors there. And there was about, I don't know, six to ten people on it, and all these guys, you know, were kind of the who's who in martial arts, at least in the combative arts, not really the tournament based styles. We had guys from Jailhouse Rock, we had guys from the V Arnis, V Jitsu, from direct lineage from Professor V, We had people who were from Moses Powell's lineage. Mm-hmm. You know, some real good guys there with some real skills. Daryl Sargent himself is amazing to watch. And
so this is an intimidating group of people.
Oh, yeah.
Sounded intimidating to me.
We got to participate in a test, Carl's test, actually.
Was that when Steve got his broken rib or something?
Yeah, Steve got body slammed down during the test and broke, like, a couple ribs. And he still wouldn't sit out the next day when it came to presenting San Yin Do. And we were down there for about 3 days. And two of those days were spent working on our presentation in front of this group. And then the last day, Daryl Sargent, Professor Sargent, calls me up and says, "Okay, Chuck, you're teaching the first half of the day at this seminar."
No pressure.
And I should also say that Mike Pope, who, as it stands right now, is the inheritor, Sokodai, of San Yin Do. If something were to happen to me, he would be the guy to go to. For his black belt thesis, he sat down with me, and over 6 months, we wrote down everything that we could think of that had to do with San Yin Do. And the outline alone ended up being like 12 pages long.
Yeah, it's a beautiful manual.
The manual's great.
That was thick. That was San Yin Do 1.0. And we're down to, we're pushing 3.0 right now. 3.0, so we're hopefully going to be redoing this manual to bring it back up to date.
It's not a beta.
Yeah. Does that mean we're participating in the alpha?
The alpha program?
But, basically, at the end of that, they said, "Okay, you know, we like what you do." And I had sent him a video and the manual ahead of time, mm-hmm. and things like that, and he had gone through it. And they sat there and looked at. Brandt told me later that they were trying to look intimidating the entire time too. So
yeah,
these are big guys.
Yeah,
really big guys.
Wow.
And
so, how long ago was that?
Oh boy. That was, had to be like 2002.
What percentage, I'm just curious, what percentage of what you did then is what we do now? And I asked this question for a very specific reason, and it's, And the reason is that we...
Less than 50%.
And the reason I ask the question is because one of the things that you've always talked about, and we talked about earlier in the podcast, is this willingness to change as you see the need to change. And that there's... unless there is a practical reason to hang on to something. And practical can mean defense against an attack, or practical can also mean, hey, it's something to do that's a hell of a workout, or it's a great balance training workout, or whatever. Then, but if it's not working for a student, then change it.
I do not have all the answers. I am discovering answers every day, mm-hmm. and it would be a disservice to our students to keep something, even though it's the wrong answer, simply because. It's doctrine,
right?
And some of the best conversations I've had prior to adding something or deleting something have been with people sitting right here. And I don't have all the answers. I trust the people that I have in my, I want to call it an inner core, but to be able to argue points pro and con with mm-hmm. me. And it's not about me or the school. It's about the students. What can we do to best service them?
Right.
In the process ourselves.
So what do you see, or what are your hopes for the future of the school, and I guess more sort of globally the style?
I'd like to see it grow. I'd like to see it move beyond where we're at now. I think that we have developed a tremendous offering here. I think it balances, there's something for everyone in it. We balance the grim reality of I won't say combat, but of self-defense and recognizing danger and being able to face it without freezing, as well as we balance that with the internal or the artistic aspects of the martial arts. I firmly believe that both are necessary. We've got a tremendous fitness program in place.
We can attest to that.
We've got one of the harder first dawn tests around.
I've got a question coming up.
You know,
it was too easy.
It's not nicknamed the Crucible for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's and rank is not mandatory at our school. You know, people that want to just come and learn can just come and learn, and people that want to come for rank can just come for rank. You can have beginners and advanced students in the same class, and everyone will get something from the class. Mm-hmm. You can walk into one of our classes for the first time and walk away with something you could use to protect yourself without having to invest yourself in the martial arts ever again.
Well, on the track of students and things like that, I've got maybe a couple of questions, and maybe they're you can either answer them one at a time or you can answer them both at the same time.
Okay.
So what do you think is something that, what do you think is one of the most important aspects of being a student and in turn being a teacher? And if you're, that's my first question. My second question is if you are a new student looking for a school, just as general advice, not necessarily based on your style or anything like that, what advice would you give to someone?
Here.
Yeah. Simple
enough. Next question.
Please feel free to answer this one too, Dan. But for myself, in a student and a teacher, I think the importance is being able to listen on both sides, mm-hmm. student and teacher, and the ability to, well, for a student, the ability to empty your cup, regardless of previous training or lack of previous training, to come in here with an open mind, an open heart, and open ears. For a teacher, I think it's important to be able to listen to your students, to recognize that everyone is unique and you can't fit them into a given mold, and that different people learn different ways, and you have to be able to take your knowledge and put it in terms that those students from different learning types and different backgrounds will understand. And you can have the best martial art in the world, but if you have a lousy teacher, it's you're not going to transmit what you want to transmit.
Right.
You're not going to be able to,
that,
to
that
share that.
That greatest martial art will die with you.
Yeah.
No one else will know what the hell you're talking about.
Exactly.
Don, what's your feelings on that?
There's this balance between student and teacher, in that it's important, I think, to be a little bit of both. Every time we teach, we're still learning things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it doesn't look that way because I think Chuck and I have learned to cover it up a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, when somebody asks you, well, what would you do in this situation? Quite often we'll say, I don't know, throw the punch or whatever, because we're
figuring it out
as we're answering.
Yeah.
You know, but teaching forces you to be able to break down everything that's going on. And so the more you teach, the more you learn, if you're open to doing that, instead of if you're just teaching doctrine.
Right.
Saying, do it this way because I said to, or because the grandmaster who lived 1,000 years ago said to.
Then you don't gain any understanding.
Then you're just quoting somebody else. You may not be learning very much yourself,
yeah.
but if you're out there actively teaching and trying to figure out why you do something that you do and trying to find something better, both your being a teacher and a student improves.
Well, and if you can look beyond the doctrine, I mean, I've seen Taekwondo classes, students or teachers of Taekwondo that I would consider as teaching with, but you wouldn't recognize it necessarily as Taekwondo because they've gone beyond the doctrine. I've also seen and been in classes and learned from people who did it this way because it was the way it was done 100 years ago. Well, Taekwondo wasn't around really as a bullet arrow more than 50 or 60 years ago.
I think we just lost some listeners.
But it wasn't because the art was bad, and it wasn't because it was the way it was done 1,000 years ago. It was because that's the only thing he knew.
Right. But I think that everybody likes to pick on Taekwondo. That's
that
is the martial
art,
and that is the martial art. And martial arts are like religions. You're allowed to pick on the ones you've been in because you've been
there. That's right.
Exactly.
But I think the thing about, we'll take Taekwondo because that's the big one, is that typically it has nothing to do with the martial art. It has to do with the people who are teaching at a specific school you are
in. And I do think that it being, and I don't know if this is the case, but it certainly seems that way to me, that Taekwondo is the most prolific of the martial arts.
Probably.
It is.
Yes.
And therefore,
it's also the most political.
Right. And therefore, you get in, you know, just as a matter of percentage, you're going to have more of these McDojos that happen to be Taekwondo schools simply because there are more Taekwondo schools.
Right.
Yes.
And I don't think...
it's an Olympic sport, too.
Right.
You know, that increases popularity tremendously right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, you go to any city and how and compare the number of Taekwondo dojos to the number of Arnis dojos.
And I don't think any of the four of us would ever say that there aren't very, very good Taekwondo schools out there.
No.
Very good.
In fact, one of our listeners is in the Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And he's Taekwondo. He's a major in the military.
Yep.
He sent us an email. He's like, hey, I listen to your podcast. And,
awesome. And I've seen the videos of his school and stuff, and it looks like a very
classy. Yeah, you don't get into the Martial Arts Hall of Fame for being a chump. Yep.
That's true. That's very true.
That's true. I don't, like I said, I don't think it's Taekwondo, or I don't think it's karate or any of the other martial arts is bad. I think it's the problem is with the transmission of knowledge. From teacher to student. And I think that if you have someone who doesn't understand it, teaching it, it's going to be diluted even more for the next generation.
Lost in translation.
And, you know, the popular thing to do, it seems to me, in martial arts is that if you don't understand it, well, that's the way it's done.
Because it's because I said so.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And
because the teacher doesn't have the ability to change it.
A majority of the reasoning behind actually collating the material for Sunny and Doe was not from good experience. It was from, I would never do this to my students.
Right.
And,
you know, it's interesting. I think this kind of comes full circle to one of the questions, Dan, that you asked right off the bat, which is the way things have changed in martial arts. Now, maybe this is because we've all progressed to this point where the people we hang out with are like-minded.
Yeah.
But my vision of what I see the martial arts are now, today, you know, in hindsight, is that we have come a long way to the point where you do question things. Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, let's figure out why.
Exactly.
And if we can't figure out why, let's throw it away.
Right.
Right?
or at least let's sidebar it until we can figure it out.
Right. Or ask someone who we think might know or whatever. Right. And I think, and it's hard to say, did we come to this? Are we, you know, do we question those things because the martial arts have come that long way? Or is it because we found these like-minded people and are pushing in a direction where it's okay to question?
I think one of the reasons that a lot of the martial arts are changing today, too, is because of the stressors that are in today's world versus 1,000 years ago.
Yes, the world is a very different place.
You know, you have to, in reality, have some sort of training for what do you call it? Against deviant ingenuity.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, you can't just, it's not going to be a fair fight. I'm not going to jump off my horse with a pole arm and say, prepare to die, you know? I'm going to, you know, if I have a gun, I'm going to shoot you.
Right.
You know, if I don't, I'm going to find something to hit you with that's close to me. You know,
and we see that in all sorts of warfare, right? I mean,
right.
Think about just like the Revolutionary War or the wars with the Indians where the British would march through in big lines and they'd just get mowed down by these skirmisher troops that were running around hiding in the trees.
Absolutely.
And they were like,
that's not fair.
That's not fair.
Life sucks.
Yeah,
deal with
this
it.
Is war.
You know?
Yeah. But what I think the first time the Greeks fought somebody that actually waged war at night.
Right.
They were shocked because people are only supposed to wage war during the day.
Right.
And
never during winter.
And never during winter. And so,
you know,
it's always evolving.
You know, 100 years plus, you know, 100 years and beyond ago, what do you bring to a duel? Your pride, a second, and a musket or a knife or a sword or whatever. Now what do you bring? All my friends.
Right.
Exactly.
You know,
you show up about an hour early and you ambush.
Exactly.
Well, and I this sort of maybe brings me to my next question. I know that one of the things that you guys encourage, I know that one of the things that you encourage, especially during tests, is cheating. Yeah. Which is one of the things that I've always thought, which amused me endlessly, in that it seems that you're more proud of a student that can cheat their way through a particular technique or a particular set of techniques, even, and that sort of creative thinking is more important than actually doing the technique itself.
In class, you know, a healthy body is always going to help you. But a healthy mind, mm-hmm. that's really what we want to push here. And by healthy mind, I mean someone who can think creatively on their feet under stress. You know, we can't obviously put you down in the middle of Harlem, you know, or even in Detroit on Devil's Night.
Right.
And expect you to stay at our school for a test. But we want to put you as close as we can to that, you know, fight or flight, autopilot, adrenalized state of mind, and see what you can do still. That's where it's really going to show what's stuck.
And not to interrupt, but you know, another.
But you will.
But I will. And another question I had.
Class dedication.
Your black belt test, the first Dan test, is notoriously arduous, and I would say difficult, only because I've been through it.
It's rather fun if you're just watching. I love supervising.
Not so much fun if you're the ookie, though. Yeah. Yeah. Why is it that you do that?
I believe.
And you know what? I should stop myself by saying Sterling's test and my test are the only two black belt tests I've ever been to. And I'm sure you guys have had more experience in that. And is it true? Are they notoriously difficult?
From tests I've been through, and in my experience, it is a lot of cultures have rites of passage for their people. And while my first Dan test was not a happy experience, it was more of a hazing. I swear I would never do that to my students. But I also wanted to make sure that we had a test that it was not harder than necessary. It was as hard as necessary, uh-huh. and that it would be a rite of passage. So it's not only comprised of the physical elements that you have to go through. It's also comprised of the ceremony afterwards, and we have a lot of information in San Yindo. When you make it to the black belt level, I have not promoted that many people in my 16 plus years of studying martial arts and teaching professionally since 92 was when I first opened my first school. I have not promoted that many people to black belt.
Well, and you've told me in the past that one of the reasons you keep a list of the things that you need to test people on is because sometimes emotionally it's difficult for
to
push people.
I do. I know. I have to have Don actually read the certificates, because if I read them, I'm not going to make it through them.
But I think I think that's
Don, you brute.
I think it's important to sense that balance of saying, you know, I think it's important that people go through this, but at the same time, these are my students and these are the people I care for, and it's difficult to force them to go through.
It's hard for me to put somebody through all that unless I've had a really bad day and just want to watch myself.
You've had a lot of bad days.
But yes, I actually had to write this stuff. We had to write this stuff down, because otherwise you might not go through everything that we felt when we wrote the test you'd need to go through to show that you have had you've shown what we need to show to pass your black belt test. I'll tell you right now that anyone who's testing for black belt has to try to fail, because you've shown me already that you know all the information.
Well, and I think that's one of the interesting things about this test, and I think in other places I've been where it's just the opposite. Your test is where you pass or fail. And at this point, and I particularly,
but that's
one
of the
things, right? Yeah, that's one of the things that I do love about this, is that you're already pushed to the point where you know you're ready for it. The test is somewhat a formality, albeit an exhaustive formality.
Well, for your black belt test,
I don't know about you, I was ready to go home.
Oh, I was ready to go
halfway
home.
Through that thing. I was like,
I thought it would never end.
It's not worth it.
Red belt isn't so
bad.
First, the first half of the test, and one thing you hear a lot in class is muscle memory, or neuromuscular pathways and things like that. The first half of the test is designed to tire you out, to push you to your limits physically. And that's not even really the test. That's more of the compulsories and the warm-ups and mm-hmm. things like that. The last half of the test is really where we're testing you. We've gotten you to the point where your test starts. And that portion of the test is designed to find out what is your muscle memory like. Two times that you basically go into autopilot. One is when the adrenaline dump happens under high stress, you know, like a mugging, a raping, any number of situations where you are in fear for your life. The second is when you're so incredibly fucking exhausted, pardon my French, that you can barely stand and you're just going through things by rote.
Right.
And I can't put you in the first, but I can have fun putting you in the second.
Right.
And so that's what I do. That's what Don and I wrote the test to do. That's the reason that you get through all of the heavy stuff, and the Jogo is my favorite of that, by the way, the monkey Jogo. And first, and then we save the scenarios for last.
Right.
And then that's where we get to see. That's where it's in chaos.
Well, and I know that for me anyway, I did sort of develop this mentality, and I think I told this story on the podcast previously, but when we were going through scenarios and you were calling out, you know, what the Uki was going to attack with, and I remember your father saying, "Oh, I don't think Dan heard that last one." And the first thing I thought was, "It doesn't fucking matter."
Right.
You know? At this point, it's not like I'm going to say, "Oh, they're attacking with a high attack coming low. This is what I'm going to do."
Right.
Because I was unable to process it. I couldn't process that information. I got to a point where I was like, "Come at me. It right. doesn't matter what you come at me with. I'm either going to fail to block the
Bring
attack."
It on.
Well, and my attitude was sort of, "Look, I'm either going to not do it or I'm going to do it. There's not really any in between. It's not right. like I'm going to do it well or I'm going to do it poorly.
Yeah.
It's that I'm either going to fail or succeed at my technique."
Your brain really is relegated to those basic functions.
Yeah.
I mean, all this extraneous thinking and all that right. just goes away. There's just not room
and,
for it.
And, you know, I think...
angle of your tone,
right.
it
right.
doesn't matter.
Well, none of that stuff makes any difference anymore when you get to that point.
I look back at some of the video of my test, and I felt like my technique was very sloppy.
And
that's kind of what I was getting around to.
But
is that
the thing is though is that with that, while it's being sloppy, look at the core of it. Not
right.
look. Not, don't look at the fingertips or you know what the end of the technique was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Look at the core. Where,
at the
was
end.
Was I covering my yeah?
Look
was I
end.
Was I covering my head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did I protect my core?
Yep.
Are they on the ground with my knee in
yeah.
their face?
Exactly.
You know? Those are the yeah. important things in life.
Yeah.
yeah.
It is amazing, though. I mean, it's a fine point. I mean, when you're to the point of exhaustion, I mean, geez, technique goes right out the door.
It does.
You know? But if you were to do the same thing to somebody who didn't have the technique even that we have, it would even be further out the door.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some
but,
there.
And like you say, the core is really what your muscles remember. Is
you
that,
also
is
find
that
out
core.
What works for you. You know,
yes.
out of the 250 techniques, you know, by the end of that test, you're doing four or five of them.
Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Those
over
are the ones
and over
for you.
Yep.
I remember I did one that you termed the one calorie technique.
Right.
yeah. I had my back against the wall, and the Uki was supposed to deliver something at me while I had my back against the wall, and he came towards me, and I kicked him in the stomach.
Yeah.
you know, and I, because I started thinking to myself, well, you know, one of the things that you and Chuck have always taught us, Don, is that why would you let someone get a hold of you?
Hell yeah.
You know, all of these techniques are a lot of techniques that, say, other martial arts do is they, I've grabbed you here, I've grabbed you there, I've got a hold of your wrist. Why would you let him get that close? And so that one calorie technique, I found that, hey, that really works for me in that my Uki's coming at me to grab my shoulders. Why would I let him get there?
Who was it? I can't remember, Demi. Help me out with this. One of our black belt tests, one of the testing people actually managed to slide a rubber knife into their pocket. Without me catching
it. Yeah.
Was that Andrew?
Andrew.
Sounds like what he did.
Because it was supposed to be like, you know, empty hand, grabbing punch, and Andrew pulled the knife out and stabbed him.
Right.
That's one of those things where, you know, it wasn't the rule. You know, we kind of had to chide him a little bit. But, you know, as soon as we turned our head, we're like, yeah.
It's like a child misbehaving really cute. You know? You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But you did it really well. Don't tell your mom. Yeah. You know?
Well, I think we should probably wrap this up. Okay. One of the things I want to wrap this up with is anything that you guys want to mention. I want to mention Innovative Martial Arts, which is www.innovativemartialarts.com.
It's plural, correct?
Yep.
We've got a lot of links up there.
We've got a lot of good links up there.
We have
an
upcoming seminar, so anybody who's in the area who's interested, check out the website.
Seminar button is active on the webpage.
Yes.
And I also wanted to make sure that we mentioned the knives.
That's right.
Yes.
TribalEdgeKnives.com.
Yes.
There's a link to TribalEdgeKnives.com from Innovative Martial Arts. And I believe there's also a link to Innovative Martial Arts from Roxor Media.
Yeah.
So any of those that you want to get around to.
One thing I wanted to address in closing also was you asked a question about what should students look for.
Yeah.
And that is, in my opinion, I personally have something against contracts.
Okay.
So for me, when I go looking for a martial arts school, I look for a place that the instructor is willing to sit down and talk with me for a few minutes, not try and rush me into signing up right now in a free uniform. A place that will let me test drive it.
Uh-huh.
I always tell people, test drive it before you buy it.
Yep.
I let people take a week or two here, based on who they are, it's case-by-case basis, to try it out. See if it's a good fit, instructor and student-wise. If it's not, I'll point you in a direction if I can.
Right.
That might be better for you. I really dislike contracts. I want people here because they want to be here.
That's a good point, actually. I've never gone to a martial arts. I've never been with a martial artist teacher who had contracts.
Contracts.
I'm a garage martial artist. Yeah. I grew up learning in garages. I mean, that's how I
went to a Motoquan place that had minimum 1 year.
1 year.
Minimum.
Mm. I got locked in to a kickboxing school. I started just because I wanted some exercise outside what I was doing, and I liked punching and kicking. Yeah. Got stuck in a year. Uncle Vito's knocking on the door going,
and I think the difference there is, when you get a place like that, that ends up being more of like a gym than it does a martial art.
Yeah,
martial arts are about for me.
Right.
I think I would be more than happy to call it out. There was a place in Detroit called Kim's Taekwondo that was relatively big. And now, that was when I was 13, and I'm, 35 now, so it was a long time ago. But they had a mandatory 1-year contract, and you could not go for a trial lesson until you signed the contract. Because they said it was insurance or something like that.
See, that's
if you got hurt in that class, then
there's a lie.
That's not to me what a good martial arts and the spirit of martial arts is about. That is a martial business,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it's there for, protecting your profits.
Well, if people want to get a hold of you to email you or ask you questions, what would be the best way to do that?
TriHarmony@comcast.net. Right. Or give me a call at 616-364-0019.
All right. And Don,
any closing comments?
This school is just one facet in a larger community. That's one thing that we really push here. Mm-hmm. We're friends here. We eat together. We go out together. It's not people who come in here and then disappear. You know, Chuck's house is right next door. You know, it's quite often that people will, like we're about to do, go and dive in together. If you're not into that, that's perfectly fine. But we try to strive to be family-friendly, a community, building each other up, not just in martial arts, but in life.
The school is going up north for Labor Day.
We're going up to, one of our students has 40 acres up on in Ludington, and we're all going up there for a weekend or so.
Right. And both of you guys also teach individual lessons on a case-by-case basis, correct?
Yep. We like to meet the people first, make sure it's a good fit, and then, we teach private lessons and individual people, too. We try to keep it fun. Awesome. Keep it real.
Well, thanks for your time. www.innovativemartialarts.com if anybody wants to get a hold of these guys or check out the classes or the class times or anything like that.
And you all know how to get a hold of us if you have questions for either of them that you want us to forward on and get to them.
I'd be glad to do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, awesome.
See you guys there.